We've set aside up to an hour of time to interview each of the four candidates that we will be reviewing this evening. We've elected to ask each candidate seven questions and to provide approximately 7 minutes for each of those questions, and with a five-minute opportunity for an opening statement and a similar opportunity for a closing statement at the end. I'm going to sort of be the timekeeper here, and I'll give you the high sign or so if you're getting close to the end there, so you can pace yourself accordingly. So if you want to take this opportunity and first introduce yourself and make some comments, please do so.
Okay. As you know, my name is Harry Hartunian, Assistant Superintendent of Schools in Beverly, Massachusetts. I've been in education for 20 years. I've been in five different school districts and positions, some by choice, some not by choice. I've been laid off once as a teacher and once as an administrator, and it gives me a great deal of sensitivity to budgetary situations and the laying off of staff and things like that. I started my first job was a teacher in Connecticut at a large urban high school, teaching five classes of Afro-American history, five times a day, and proceeded into a position of a person who organized, developed, and implemented an alternative school, high school, in Newington, Connecticut. And then I decided I wanted to go into administration. And I've been in administration for about 14 years, and I've enjoyed it. In 1983, or 1982, I was laid off as an assistant principal in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. They did some bumping because they closed an elementary school. And in Connecticut, certification for principals and assistant principals is K-12, not like Massachusetts. And so I looked for other positions, and I had several offers, and I decided to go to Middletown, Connecticut, where Wesleyan University is. And it was a good choice. I became the assistant principal at Woodrow Wilson High School. And within 6 months, the superintendent decided that he wanted to merge both high schools, Middletown High School and Woodrow Wilson, together. And the two principals of both, the principals of each school applied, and I applied, and I got the position. And so I had a year to plan, organize a new high school. I had a year to work under one of the people whose position I was taking. But it was an incredible experience. Imagine starting a school from the ground up, where you have two math department heads, two football coaches, and you only need one. And I was 30 years old at the time, and it was quite an experience. I can honestly tell you the first couple of years were very shaky. I was the youngest person in the building at the time. But we moved forward, we did a great job. And after 8 years as high school principal, I saw that the school had gone as far as I could take it, because we had started at zero and worked our way all the way back up to 90%. And so I decided I'd like to go to the central office. At the time I had a son going into kindergarten and a son going into second grade. The family and I just talked about it, and we decided it was a good move to move on. And I don't know why, while everyone was heading down to Connecticut, I wanted to come up to Massachusetts. I'd been trying for years, and I had several offers. All the communities I wanted were on the seashore. I ended up in Beverly, Massachusetts, a system of about 5,000 students, 11 schools, and it was a great opportunity for me. I'm the only assistant superintendent. But we've had some difficult budget times like you, caused by things similar to what Reading's gone through, special education, cost overruns, they're unexplained. And so I've been a part of that. In those 4 years, I've been involved with every aspect, interim business manager, director of all the curriculum, director of special education. I do all the negotiations for the teacher's contract. Beverly, in November of 93, had a teacher strike. And when we came out of the teacher strike, we started to look at collaborative bargaining. And we used Nancy Peace for a while, and then went on to Larry Susskind. Larry does places like Bosnia, and we just thought Beverly could use something like that after a teacher strike. And we've used it. We've been somewhat successful. And certainly at the end, I'd be interested to get your impressions of collaborative bargaining. I've had a wonderful experience in Beverly, and I think that the major contributing factors to that have been the professional staff. It's a wonderful staff, committed to the children, committed to the parents. I believe that the parents in that community are extremely supportive. One of the things that intrigues me about Reading is you already have a building project well underway. Beverly's just starting that, and I know the work that's involved in that. I'm very interested in the Reading position. I feel I have the intellectual capability. I believe I have the academic preparedness, and I have the personal experiences both as an interim superintendent, assistant superintendent, and a high school principal, to take Reading, where I think it's in the high 80s, low 90%, to 100% into the 21st century.
Great. Thank you. For the first question. Could you define, with specific examples, your management philosophy and how that plays itself out with peers, staff, parents, school committee, and the town?
I would describe my management philosophy as I like to empower others so that they can reach for high levels of performance and expectations. We've had many cutbacks, curriculum directors, things like that, and so a great deal of what has been accomplished in Beverly has been done by its professional staff through its leadership. And so during the past 4 years, I've had the ability to work very closely with the teaching staff, the parents, and the other people. And I believe in empowering people. I first think that the best thing to do is to get to know the people in the schools, to get to know the managers in the schools, to get to know the parents, identify their strengths, as I see them, and then give tasks out for those people in a way that they are achievable, that they don't become frustrated, and that there's a great deal of support built in, monetarily if possible, but certainly support from the central office. I believe in... What prompted you to have those two, were they public hearings?
We had one public hearing, and then I went into the... And then I went into the one at the state on April 6th that
okay.
got...
Do you think there'd be objection to continue?
I would wait for the other two members of the committee.
I chopped grade one. I'm looking at the Cleveland River, it's my favorite.
We're back, Tim.
We had some budget problems, so we had to pick a learning area, and we picked math because the NCTMs were so well accepted from preschool to postdoc.
You might want to explain.
Last year we completed the whole cycle.
We
have mandated calculators, grades 3, 4, and 5.
Audio, yeah.
Every child has an Explorer calculator
now. Can you see if we're audio?
That's great.
It's worked very well. And teachers are excited by it, too.
When I taught first, we knew what
new. Yeah.
Are we on? We're all set?
Go ahead, Tim.
We're all set? Okay. We're back apparently live at the school committee. Apparently we were overridden by programming from Lawrence on some kind of automatic process, and it took a bit of time to get through to the station up there to undo the automatic override. So we are back here live once again, and we'll continue with our interview of Dr. Harry Haritunian, who is the assistant superintendent from Beverly. I think when we left off, we actually completed the first question and answer, and so we will pick up where we left off. And so you folks at home, if you have been patient with me all this time, have not actually missed anything. So Robin, I think you're next. And Dr. Haritunian, thank you very much for your patience.
Sorry. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Would you provide the community with your vision, or tell us about your vision of the Reading school system over the next 5 years? What would be the major components of achieving that vision as a second part to that question?
The vision of the Reading schools to take it into the 21st century would be built from input from the total school community and non-school community. It would include the partners of our retired people in Reading. It would include the business people. It would include parents, teachers, and students. If I became the successful candidate as superintendent in Reading, one of the first things I would do would be to work toward a entry plan, a plan that would take me 2 to 3 months that would include the vision. One of the things that happened back in the late 70s and early 80s was we looked at our junior high schools and found that they weren't meeting the needs of a very important group of children. And so we changed over to another method, the 6-8 middle school, and we found that to be very successful. We now are having a crisis in our high schools. It's a post-World War II type of model that was used for baby boomers to move through large groups of people through. And Beverly is moving toward a very big change next year, similar to the model you tried back in April. We're going to 4 84-minute classes. And part of the vision would include a very comprehensive look at that. It provides the students with more instruction by virtue of the fact that there are three less passing bells of 5 minutes. It incorporates the time and learning mandates from the state. But most of all, it allows some of our more competitive students an extra period so that they can take courses like Latin and a Romantic language concurrently. It affords the student the opportunity to experiment in many more areas and actually increase the graduation requirements. Part of the vision would look to more collaboration with the retirees. As we move to the 21st century, we need to do more to make the people who are not paying direct money to the school system, because they don't have children in the school system, we need to get them involved with a partnership with the schools. And the more that they're involved with the school, the more ownership that they have. That would include opening the schools in the afternoons and evenings and weekends for recreational purposes, volleyball, baseball games. One of the things my 11-year-old knows about Reading is it's got an excellent baseball team because he's in Major League, Little League. And so we need to do more of those kind of things. An example would be to have something I did when I was a high school principal is have what's referred to as a senior prom, where every high school senior prior to graduation would call somebody up who is over 55, 60, and have a senior prom, where they would invite someone, a retiree, to come to a prom and to engage in different activities. The other thing we need to look at is our business community. 91% of the tax base in Reading is residential. And so we need to look at those people who are businesses and things like that. We need to look at those people and find how we can better serve them. A great many of the students in Reading High School do serve as substitute people during the summer and things like that. More collaboration in making the schools the single most important happening thing in the Reading school system. I've heard it at the subcommittee meetings, I've read it in the paper that Reading spends the least amount on the 128th strip for education. You know, I think one of the things that people don't recognize is how that money is spent. There's always an adage that we need to spend more money, more money. But before we spend that money, we need to see how that money that we are spending is spent and how it best can be spent. And I have a suspicion, based on all the things I've read, the Chronicle back a year, and I have copies of all the contracts, and I have gone through all the handbooks at the schools and things like that, Reading does an exceptionally better job than some other communities in making sure that the fat is very lean on that. So I think that those are false analogies to immediately say, because you only spend $4,500 and Lexington may be spending $6,600. I've compared your MEEP scores, and your MEEP scores are right where they should be, or they're slightly above your SAT scores. All of that would be built into the vision. All of that would be to sit down with the community. Lastly, one of the things that I would promote is a educational summit. What I would very much like to do as superintendent would be to come to Reading and to bring some people in who can help the entire community on one Saturday talk about the school system and the vision that the Reading people, its community, its taxpayers, its businesses, its people committed to the schools, can talk about how we can move the school system forward. When I came to Beverly, I chaired that committee, and it was very successful. Having an educational summit with a major change in leadership would be something I think that would really help the Reading people look to where those schools, and that would incorporate all the things, including the building projects, the redistricting, the over expenditures in different accounts, so they all could be looked at through an analysis of what's the single most important thing, and again, going back to the center of the child being the most important.
Thank you. Sue.
From your limited introduction to the school district, would you please compare and contrast the structure between your current situation in Reading? Give one example of a difference or contrast and how it would help Reading.
I would say budget. There aren't many communities that have not had a stumble at some point. And back in 1992, it wasn't a stumble in just the school community. The city of Beverly had a deficit of over $5 million. And so the Department of Revenue came in and worked with us on a remedial plan. And if you think Reading learns how to spend $4,500 per student, Beverly became really good at spending less than that. And we're still doing a great job. And so I've learned how to build in the safeguards, the quarterly reports, the monthly reports to the committee. I've been the interim business manager on two separate occasions in the last 2 years, so I have a clear understanding. And so I've learned that just because the money comes in and the money goes out doesn't mean it's working. We as elected people, I as an appointed person, the most entrusted thing we have are the children. Probably the second is their money. And we're not a private organization, we're public and we use public funds. And when we are not handling that money the way that the community wants us to, we need to be held accountable. And as elected people, they look to you to find out why the appointed people in the district are not doing their job. So I'm extremely sensitive to that. And as superintendent, I would build in a great many safeguards. The situation that you have that I don't have the luxury is your building projects. For the last 4 years, we've tried very hard because of this deficit to try to get a building project through. We've had building commissions come in, and we've had two small projects of a couple classrooms, modulars like you have, the two at your schools. But the idea of becoming superintendent in a community that's well on its way, where a superintendent can spend the vast majority of his or her time working on educational issues and not building projects, not having to go out and spend time selling that, but can go out and sell the excellence of the school system, is something I really envy and something that attracted me to this community. It's one of many things.
Tom. How would you define an ideal working relationship with the school committee?
For most superintendents, the committee that elects them isn't always there. And so to build a relationship with individuals on the committee, I think, is important, but it's more important to build a relationship with the entire committee. And so trust, integrity, hard work, a keen desire to make sure that every child is successful are key ingredients, I believe, in that relationship. As superintendent, one of my responsibilities is to have answers for school committee members. As elected people, they're held accountable. They're a board of directors. Because each of you don't have the training or the expertise to run a school system, you hire or appoint someone to do that. And so we're an extension, superintendents, of the school committee. It's important that the committee works well together. There, as a superintendent, I believe that one of the most important things you can do is to help the committee to work together, to not interfere, but to help people see other people's viewpoints, to have people maybe be more open, to learn the way that they learn things. Some people may process things differently, and that may aggravate other people. Now, it's key that the superintendent is cognizant of that and not worried about his or her job, but worried how that committee interacts with each other. Trust, integrity, hard work, a commitment, an academic knowledge of what is needed, the essence of what good teaching is, I would say that Reading is getting $1.50 out of every dollar it puts forward, so I would say to get $2 out of every dollar you put forward. But the relationship of the superintendent with the school committee is key. I learned that as a high school principal, and I've learned that as an assistant and as an interim superintendent. The trust of the community is built on its leaders. It's building principals and the superintendent. If people trust those people at the building level and the superintendent, they will trust the school system. They will believe that the school system is a good place for their children, and they'll have a commitment to that. Ultimately, we want every child who wants a public education to attend our schools, not to go to private or parochial, and to only go to parochial for religious reasons. Nobody spends more money on education than public schools, and so we need to make sure that that's done correctly. And as the appointed chief appointed official, It's my duty to make sure that those answers that you need as elected people are there. The better you look, the better I look, the better the system looks, the better our children get educated.
Thank you.
Given the enormous complexities of running an $18 million operation, how do you accomplish having the day-to-day activities done, the weekly crises solved, address the concerns of various constituencies, be visible, and still be able to be the quote-unquote educational leader?
Well, I think one of my key strengths is organization. I think in my letters of reference, several committee members talked about the fact that if they have a criticism, I work too many hours. At least once a month in the Beverly Public Schools, I teach. I teach process writing. I teach science, whatever it might be. And I do that because I need to get back to the roots. Being an ex-high school principal, many people thought that I could never go down to the elementary schools. But that's where I spend a great deal of my time. It's very important. It's very important for a superintendent to be visible in the schools. It's also important that when the superintendent goes into those schools, he or she is not there to check on people, but to go and enjoy what's happening in the schools. Many times as assistant superintendent, I'll be walking through the schools and very visible in the schools. And I may see something that I don't agree with or think it's appropriate, but I won't interfere. There's a building manager, there's an educational leader there, and it's not important. What if I wasn't there? So I've established a relationship in the schools that I can walk in and out of classes anytime and no one feels inhibited or the assistant superintendent or interim superintendent is there. I also think that it's important that the part of that vision is constantly focused. I remember as a teacher and I remember as a principal and even as assistant superintendent, I have my goals on my daily calendar so I always see it. And it's always important to know what those goals are and to use those goals in setting how your day is going to happen, how your week is going to happen. Running an $18 million school system is certainly very tough. But in Beverly, we have a $25 million budget, and we don't have a central office any bigger or any smaller than you do. A superintendent, assistant superintendent, a director of pupil services. We do have a business manager, but I would trade that off because of the relationship you have with the town. And I run the day-to-day operations of the school department, and we have 11 schools. But I always find time to teach. I always find time to attend every event that I'm invited to. It does compromise a little bit with my personal and family life, but I also have the luxury of being able to go into those schools anytime I want and see those children. And I do teach in their classes often, too. It's also sitting down with the teachers and listening to what they believe is important and being a very good listener. Coming into a school and just shaking hands and running through the building, it doesn't work. One of the things that we're doing right now is we pick one day a month and go into a school for the entire day. And we spend the entire day. And if parents are told that we're going to be there, and they set up appointments with us, and we meet with the faculty at the end of the day. And again, it's not an attempt to come in and snoop, or it's just to go back to that school and make sure that we've spent some time there and talk to the people about the issues they have. It's very difficult to do, but I've been very successful at it. I would say I'm probably one of the most visible administrators in the Beverly school system. And I've established a relationship in all the schools where I feel very welcome. It's not uncommon for me to go in and sit in the faculty room during lunch and have people interact with questions and things like that with me. They're very comfortable with that. And the more you establish that relationship, being visible in the business community, establishing a big, strong business partnership, going to the plays, going to the high school football games, when Rennie wins the state championship baseball, making sure you're there. But it's difficult, but it's also setting priorities too. Finally, delegation. Delegating individuals who can cover some bases. I'm a firm believer in identifying people's strengths and then sending them out there and not micromanaging them in any way, but being there periodically to provide support and to provide some adjustments. I have learned a long, long time ago as a teacher, as an assistant principal, as a principal, and as an assistant superintendent, that if you get to know the people that work in the school system and you identify their strengths and the areas they're not comfortable with, you can be very, very successful in pigeonholing people in areas that they have a talent that no one else has and getting some of the best results for very little money.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Given the resources we have for public education in Reading, could you outline for us the process by which you put a budget together? And could you give some specific examples? And also, could you discuss your role in the execution or management of that budget throughout the course of the year?
Okay. I believe in a program-type budget as well as a line-item budget. A line-item budget works well for people to see where things are. But unfortunately, when you have 5,000 paper clips and they're sitting there in an arbitrary line, it becomes very easy to take out 1,000 paper clips. But those paper clips may be needed to hold all the curriculums together that you want or the curriculum frameworks. So I believe that there needs to be a direct correlation between money and how that money is going to be used to improve programs in the school system. And so my experiences have been through zero-based budgeting, PBBS, which is program budgeting, line item budgets. I've worked with just about every different format. What I'm most comfortable with is sitting down with the, and then now with the net school spending coming, it becomes much more easy because you know basically how much money you're going to have, is establishing a per student allocation at each level for instructional purposes. So that the elementary, for not salaries, not benefits, not heat, not oil, but basically the textbooks and those kind of things, putting as much of that back into the building level as possible and giving the site council and the principal as much control as possible. Establishing a per student allocation at the elementary, at the middle, and at the high school. Asking each principal to use their October 1 enrollment from the previous year to establish an amount of money. Then to go to each teacher, I like to mandate that every teacher must fill out a one-page budget request, including the 5 or 6 lines of those items that they would have control of, consumables, textbooks, whatever it might be. And if a teacher doesn't want to fill one out, that's okay, but they need to send it back saying, I don't want to fill one out, so that everyone feels that they've had at least the opportunity. All those budgets are at the elementary level are collected by the principal by grades, at the middle school and high school level by department, and they're put into a priority. The principal will sit down with department heads or curriculum people to kind of decide where the priority should be. After that's been done, a budget's sent down to us and we review it. In turn, we take the school improvement plan and we look at the previous school improvement plan and those areas that we feel they've had success and those areas that have not been successful and see how the school improvement plan parallels the budget request. Because we don't do the school improvement plans just to do them. We do them with the idea that we need to fund them and we need to move forward with them. Then we sit down and we develop a budget. We generally have an idea of what the net school spending is going to be within $100,000, $200,000, half a million dollars, and then we put it together. One of the things that's been very successful for us in the last few years, and we did it this year, is ask the school committee to prioritize, and we give them a list of about 200 items by level, elementary items, 50 items, middle school, 75, high school, maybe 100, and then central administration. And it has things like, do you want to continue to have teams at the middle school? Do you want to continue to have 2 custodians at the elementary schools? Do you want to continue to fund staff development? Do you want to continue to have a centralized staff development? Do you want to continue to have staff development money that the principals control at the building level? Those kind of issues. We put this all together after the site council. So we tried to build a budget with the idea that site councils will have input into it. Certainly, they don't finalize it, but they have recommendations. And it's very difficult because the site councils are putting these things together at a very early stage, and the net school spending doesn't usually come down until March. I was very lucky. I've done a considerable amount of consulting work for MESPA, Massachusetts Elementary Principals Association, on school reform and site councils. So I've in-serviced site councils all over the North Shore, and that's been very helpful in establishing roles and how the budget will go through. Clearly, one of the things that we don't do is we don't spend a lot of time educating the public on the budget. We show up at a meeting, we show up at 1 or 2 meetings. I think that one of the things that I would like to do as superintendent is establish an ongoing parental group that meets with the superintendent monthly basis to talk about the budget, how the money's going. This not only safeguards from problems that came around here and we've had, but also gives parents an understanding of where the strengths and weaknesses are in the budget, where the support is needed, where the support is not needed within that budget. Budget's put together and it's brought to the school committee, a subcommittee on finance, if you will. And we ask people to come in. We invite all our site councils to come in and talk about it. The budget for a school, a budget for the district, and how it'll be put together. Last year, because we had a new superintendent, I was asked to go to City Hall to present the budget. So I presented the budget to City Fathers under the Ed Reform. And it's pretty comprehensive. It's not as bad as it used to be when you used to, you know, tooth and nail fight and kick, bite, and scream for every dime. It's, at least in most communities, the minimum net school spending has really become the maximum. I know that you folks have done fairly well. I've seen some of the articles that I've read in the paper about the fact that you came within $100,000 of what you would like, and I saw the adjusted the budget at 17.9 of the $18 million. I think Reading is a well-established community that has a strong belief in the educational system. And I know there isn't a great deal of open space, but there still is some areas. I met with the town planner for a couple hours, and he explained to me his vision of where he would, or a community planner, where he would like to go. And I was told specifically not to talk about certain areas he told me about, but there are things there that I think that could be done so to build an even stronger tax base in Reading.
Thank you. Robin.
What useful method of teacher evaluation have you used in the past? Was it successful, and could you tell us why?
I've used a lot of teacher evaluation systems because of the number of districts I've been in. One of the most successful methods is a collaboration of a lot of things. I would very much be interested in sitting down with the association in Reading and talking about student input of courses K through 12, designing an instrument for even kindergarten students, preschool students, to give teachers feedback, high school students on the course of studies, on the evaluation system. But that these evaluations would go directly to the teacher and would go no further. There's a misconception that if people are constantly looking over people's shoulders, people will improve. The fact of the matter is, in this profession, people go into a classroom for a lot of years, and only periodically someone comes in to check. It's not like the public sector, where it's a 1 to 10 ratio or a 1 to 15 ratio. In most school systems, it's 1 to 50 or 1 to 60 in the supervisory. So a great deal of what goes on has to be within the individual for professional improvement. I found this to be a wonderful tool. K through 12, having students give input at the end of a semester or the end of a year on how the evaluation tools went, the books that they use, the manipulatives, the things, were there any surprises? You know, students don't like surprises any more than adults. And when things happen that they don't know about, that hurts, and it hurts the system. And so establishing upfront expectations for evaluation is real important. I also believe in peer evaluation. One of the things that I would like to make available to any teacher in the district is to be able to observe other teachers. We have not used, and I have not used, consultants for a number of years, primarily because I found the greatest resource we had was right under my nose, and that was the teachers. There were a great many teachers who, through their own personal professional growth, had learned certain things and through additional training could come back as a trainer to people within the district, allowing teachers the flexibility to go and observe those kind of things. I think that accountability is key. Any evaluation system must have accountability built in. I personally like a narrative system because it allows the individual, through words, to express things that checkoffs don't always do. Presently, I think we're going to be establishing a committee because our evaluation tool needs to be redone, and it's got to be a partnership. I also would like an evaluation tool that takes in some of the things like Safrir's model out of Harvard and some of the other research institutes in helping to put together a model. A lot of times we develop our own evaluation tool, but it's just an updated version of what exists. And in fact, there's some really good models out there that we could bring. And videotaping is certainly allowing people to go out. In the curriculum frameworks, if you've read that, the whole professional development. I mean, I was ecstatic to find that your professional development account went up 194%. I think that's wonderful. The future for Reading lies in its teaching staff. If we don't update that teaching staff that came in between 62 and 68 with the baby boomers, they're in their 25th, 30th year, we're not going to move into the 21st century the way we want. So the greatest emphasis we can put is to the teaching staff and creating professional opportunities for them. The contract in Reading that allows teachers college reimbursement up to $650 is a wonderful to expand those type of things. Now with PDPs. I like an evaluation system that is non-threatening. There are opportunities when people are not performing. There are different ways to do it, and it's not something we like to talk about a lot, and it's not used a lot. I also find that encouragement works a lot better than threatening, and so very, very seldom is that used. Nurturing an individual. I've seen many teachers who work at 80% and are doing far better than teachers who are working at 100%. I think all we want is 100% of the capability of any teacher. We also need to train our administrators on what good teaching is, how to identify it, how to promote it, and making them not facilitators and not building managers, but true educational leaders. A lot of times when we introduce new curriculums, we spend a lot of time with the teachers. I like to spend a lot of time first with the principals so that they can identify, because they're the ones who actually implement that curriculum in the schools. Because like you, we don't have a lot of curriculum people in the classrooms all the time. And so we need those principals to help us out. A lot of our training is done by teacher to teacher. All of this contributes to the evaluation process of good teaching and how to identify it. I think that allowing teachers collaboration in the classroom is wonderful in helping to improve instruction. It's a very high priority for me. I would prefer not using a checkoff, but I know that many districts use that and have worked that out with the bargaining unit. But a narrative with topics, curriculum, instruction, budget, use of materials and things like that, I think are key as part of the evaluation tool.
Well, great. Thank you very much. That was the last of our pre-prepared questions. Maybe if you want to take 5 minutes or so to sort of summarize and leave us with whatever thoughts you wish to do, we appreciate that.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to be interviewed tonight. Just to be one of six is certainly something I'm very proud of, and I certainly appreciate that. Reading has had a long, long reputation of excellence under Bob, and he has some very big shoes to fill. It's not a system that needs any major overhaul. It's not a system that needs somebody very different. It needs someone to come in and pick up where they are and to move it forward and to make change very selectively, to listen to its staff, to listen to its parents, and to listen to its community and its school committee and where that change should be. If I was a successful candidate, I'd spend at least the first 4 to 6 months listening to the people out there and developing an entry plan, and to running draft after draft of that entry plan out to the stockholders, the parents, the teachers, the students, the committee, the non-people who do not have children in the school department, and getting everyone to buy into it. And then I would publish it in a newspaper, and I would make sure that everyone has a copy so that everyone knows when things are going to happen, in what order they will happen, and when in the plan, 3 to 5 year entry plan, that those things are going to happen. As I said while the camera was off and during my entry or my opening statement, I have the academic preparedness. I've worked in 6 districts. I've worked my way up to an assistant superintendent. I am emotionally, academically prepared to be a superintendent, and I would very much like to be the superintendent in Reading, because I believe I have all the skills to take it into the 21st century as one of the finest school districts in eastern Massachusetts. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here tonight.
Well, thank you very much. And again, we apologize for the delay and technical difficulties we had, but your patience was appreciated.
My pleasure.
Thank you.